Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Challenge Battle of the Bloodlines or Hap podcast for the premiere. I am Brian Cohen. Here with me, as always, is my co-host, Allie Escher. Allie, how are you?
I am doing great. Tonight is officially, when we're recording this, the first night of Hanukkah, so I'm stuffed to the brim with latkes, which is always a good thing. And I'm really pumped to talk about this episode. It was a great start to what I hope is going to be a great season. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm just happy that you're willing to come back to our lowly little podcast after your trip to the stars earlier this week.
Yeah, I'm on a high. Like, this must be why people do drugs, because it's like, it's an addiction. It was so much fun. Absolute dream come true. Talk Survivor with Rob Cesternino on the main feed of Rob Has a Podcast, answering listener voicemails, and it was a blast. And the majority of the feedback has been overwhelmingly positive, and it's totally surreal. And I'm sad it's going to come to an end very, very soon.
Wait, has there been negatives? Honestly, I haven't seen any negatives.
I'm just, you know, being fair world. I haven't read everything that's out there, I'm sure. But anyway, everyone who's been amazing, supportive, and kind, I totally lived out a dream. And no, it was great. But I'm glad to be back. This is like coming back home. We have our thing going here. So glad to be back.
Yeah, so we got a great premiere to discuss. I need a little cheering up because my Giants season basically came to an end today. So I need some cheering up with the challenge.
At the hands of my Jets.
Yeah, so
what a repeat.
I've had better days, so let's jump into TJ Lavin being all clean cut so I can make myself feel better.
Could you get one of your teams to have a good season?
I the whole sports world is now flipped on its head from where I was as a child, and I don't like it. I don't like it.
Sucks to suck, bro.
It really sucked to suck today.
But as you were saying, TJ's rocking a fresh cut. It's great to see TJ back at 100%. He previously had a serious accident, and I feel like we're seeing the old TJ we know and love with a new crisp look.
Yeah, he's able to joke around with the cast, and I like that they have like a really good respect for him, as opposed to like what we've seen with Are You the One, with the way they make fun of the host there. There's no making fun of TJ back at the house. It's all respect, which I appreciate.
Can I ask you a question? When they're introducing, oh, we have your brothers, your cousins, your sisters, when they say cousins, Vince and Bananas give a little kiss on the cheek. There's a lot of male family kissing this week on reality television.
Yeah, like my family are pretty affectionate and stuff, but if my dad ever tried to like kiss me or one of my cousins tried to kiss me, I would be very confused as to what was going on. We're not a male kissing family.
No judgment.
Not that there's anything wrong with that, but that's just not who we are.
A lot of concern from the viewers, including myself, on the fact that we have no idea still what the format of this season is going to be.
No, and that's one of the things you touched on in the preview was, you know, hopefully we would get an idea of what was going on. And, you know, we had an idea for this one episode what was going on, but that did not offer any clarity as to what's going to happen in episode two and moving forward.
Yeah, we don't know how the money is going to be distributed, which isn't really a surprise because they haven't told us the format. So if they told us the money, it would make no sense. But they do. He does emphasize. He gives us one little nugget that he emphasizes that your fate is 100% tied to your bloodline. Ooh.
As if that probably wasn't going to be the case anyway. when is your fate not always 100% tied to your partner?
Well, it's unclear, right, if they're going to be partners. So it kind of goes along with him trying to fake it out. But I'm not buying it.
That the fate is 100% tied or just the fake end?
No. I'm not. I mean, obviously, they can't keep this format going much longer. No. And I would have to think the more experienced players know that this makes no sense, even from just a day one perspective.
Yeah, the logistics don't really tie to what to keep this going week after week.
All right. So then we get the floodgates open and everyone runs in like it's, you know, Oprah's favorite things, runs into the villa.
Yeah. Even like Bananas and Nani, who've been doing these for years, they run and they have a smile on their face like they're 8 years old running down on Christmas morning to open presents. It's, I mean, to be young, I guess, and live in that moment, sure, but it's amazing to never get tired of it.
Well, just like 8 year olds, they're stowed away in bunk beds, which I never can get over. You'd figure there'd be like at some point, like a maybe on X's, there'd be like a winter suite where you like stay for the night.
Yeah. I was even thinking not even for the night, like they should have, like if they have winners come back from the previous season, like that should be a perk. It's like to help you for the next season. Oh, you should be able to stay in a suite.
I don't like the full season suite, but I, now that I'm just thinking of this on the spot, I like on an ex's arrival season, making two people stay in like a king size bed in a honeymoon suite.
And should like the losers have to stay like outside in like a dump or something?
Well, now we're entering Big Brother territory where they're the have nots. But I'm willing to borrow more formats from CBS shows. Sure.
Yeah, I mean, yes, Challenge has no problem picking up CBS storyline, so that's fine.
One thing I want to correct from last week, it's an unofficial correction. Dario has short hair and Raffi has the long hair. So my bad, everyone who is taking my word for it. I said the reverse on the preview.
But good luck trying to pick out who's who if they're talking without any in a non-confessional situation, because I think that's going to be a problem all season long.
Well, like, do they have to dress alike? Like, you're grown men. Like, do we need the coordinated outfits?
That's a little weird. That's like, yeah, that's the way your mom dresses you up for like a family portrait.
You don't know my mom. Sorry.
Didn't even think that's so personal. Yeah.
One nugget, I keep saying that. Let's drink every time I say nugget.
That's actually really funny because when you said that, I just took a sip of water.
We get crazy here on the Challenge Wrap Up podcast. Yeah, I'm
getting drunk off water.
So we get the piece of information that's kind of interesting and could be disturbing, that Brianna has hooked up with three of Jenna's exes. Now, could she have hooked up with Jay?
I feel like the odds are very high, considering Jay was apparently had plenty of people on the side when he was quote-unquote dating Jenna, even though they apparently never even went on a date. So I think there's a decent chance that it's somewhere along the way Brianna and Jay hooked
up. Whoa, I'm not trying to accuse anyone of cheating. You know, it was an ex situation. I'm not about the drama. I'm not accusing them of that. I'm just saying potentially she could have hooked up with Jay. And in my opinion, the odds are even greater because she says that Zach is weird. So if Zach's not her type, the complete opposite is Jay. So maybe she was interested in him.
They are both weird, though. So they have kind of that in common. Whoa. But weird in different ways, I guess.
Coming in hot.
Yeah. Hot take saying Zach is weird.
And then this is hysterical, and I know this is a favorite part of yours, when we get a flashback to, you cheater, you're going to die.
Yeah, that needs to be a drop. Anytime one of us says something we don't like, you should drop the, you're going to die drop. That's perfect. Because well, that's really one of my favorite Challenge moments in history.
I'd have my finger on that button like every 10 seconds.
Yeah, that's
the
true.
Whole podcast would just be that as my response. No, I'm kidding.
I mean, I don't think that would be a problem. I think that would be great.
And then this is the first part where our draft comes into play here. Debatable cry from Camilla. I'm ruling no cry.
Yeah, I didn't have a cry there either.
So what's your definition of a cry?
So my cry, I really try to lean towards cries in the episode just because that's more of the scene. But if there's a crying in a confessional, I'll do it. But I need to like see tears. I need to see a tear. And I don't think there was even a tear with Camilla. She kind of got like a little choked up, but that wasn't really a tear.
I agree. And full disclosure, Brian and I have talked about this off air, but you seem to be changing your tune.
I didn't change my tune with Camilla. I've always said that wasn't a cry, but I still stand by. I think Corey did cry, which I think we're about to get to.
I would like to say to the audience, and please get involved only if you agree with me, that like when you well up with tears, your face gets red, you say, oh, I'm going to cry. You dab the corners of your eye, as Camilla did here. Not a cry. If you're not clearly crying, I award you no points, and may God have mercy on your soul.
I understand that, but it's also, it's like, then it's, where does the well become a cry? Like, I know, obviously, there's certain situations where someone's crying. Like, Nicole in the club, that's 100% crying. There's no dispute. But then it's like, where's the cutoff line of crying versus welling?
It's that definition of pornography. I know it when I see it. And that applies here. You know how you see it. It's a cry is a cry.
I thought you were going a whole different definition with the definition of pornography. So I'm glad you went with I know it when I see
That's
it.
That's like the famous definition of pornography. Yeah.
I know a different quote from Parks and Rec. So.
I feel like it's 100%. There's a complete difference between if someone's not having a full cry, no points. But well, let's move on. We'll deal with it later. Let's leave that to future Allie and future Brian to deal with.
Okay. So what did you make of the infamous bananas toast for the season?
Shit's weak.
Yeah, it was kind of weak. It wasn't his great one. I'm sure he plans his stuff and he didn't, I don't know, did he not put his full effort in? It was not his top work. It was not good.
Yeah, and Leroy totally upstaged him with just classic Leroy saying, this toast is to never say me and Candace's name because I love y'all and I would never want to have to set your house on fire back at home. Which, what I love about Leroy is, like, he's going to put that out there and just hit you over the head with it as a joke, but you also know he's serious, so it is like kind of a nice strategic move.
Yeah, because Leroy is one of the people who 100% holds a grudge. Like, I know we talked about Kahada being like someone who can vote in, and it's like, oh, he'll just shrug it off. Like, Leroy remembers, I think, every single person in the history of the challenge who's ever thrown him in, and he will be back for blood when the moment comes. So that's, you don't want, if you're targeting Leroy, you better be sure if you come at the king, you best not miss.
Speaking of things that grown adults say that are like they shouldn't be saying, like what you just said.
Wait, okay. If you're saying I should not be courting The Wire, then I'm going to run out of things to talk about.
Does Bananas genuinely not register how insane it is for a grown man to be like, yo, what's up? It's Bananas.
I'm here with my cousin Vinny.
That I thought was a great joke. But the intro of like not even saying like, it's Johnny Bananas, or like, it's Johnny, you just know me as Bananas.
The fact that a 34-year-old man refers to himself by a fruit.
I mean, all I think about is like Donkey Kong or like Mario Kart with the trail of bananas behind him. Like, he's a fool.
I mean, it's weird, but I mean, that's who he is. Like, this is just his persona. Not even just his persona. This is him as a person. Like, he is Bananas from the challenge. So if he, like, what everyone's saying, you want him to retire. When he retired, he has just, like, this is it. Like, this is his life. I don't know what he does in phase two of his life. So he's going to do this for as long as he can, because this is his identity.
Brian, stop thinking that you know people from their reality TV persona. Okay, this is a character he's putting on, right? We don't see, Are You the One has taught us anything. It's that we don't know these people, Brian.
But I feel like Bananas has been in my life for so long that I do know him.
You're pathetic.
I do.
Where's the button where I can say you're gonna die? No, I'm just kidding. I would never say that. No, I totally know. I 100% know what you're saying, but like, I feel like in every season that's gone on, he's like dropped off a little bit of his real name. And now I think last season, obviously, he was like this too, but it wasn't until Free Agents, where him and Johnny Portland were on together, that I like really remember him only being referred to as Bananas.
Well, I think that's when that might have been when he started, like, on his challenge jersey going by Bananas. I think it was pretty recently that started happening.
And now it's like all of a sudden I blinked and there's like a 34-year-old man calling himself Bananas on my TV screen, and I'm supposed to accept that as okay.
Speaking of challenge jerseys, though, why on earth are those not like sold online somewhere?
Oh my god! How does that sell them? You looked because you want to buy one.
I've looked before and they're not available, or even like a custom one. Like, I would 100% make a custom like Ryan jersey for myself for the challenge.
Oh my god!
That's not even a joke.
Moving swiftly on. So I don't even say. Oh, one thing. So the big.
I flustered her.
I'm like, I'm just so sad. No. the big story of this episode is the sun is coming up on night one and we're just moving right into day two. And I'm like, I'm not that impressed that they, you know, stayed up for 5 hours or whatever it took for the sun to come up from when they got to the house. But also when there's that Tony and Nicole scene fight, it's the sun's down again. So it's just like, to make such a big deal about the sun coming up only serves to emphasize the fact that the editing's out of order.
It would have been more of a moment if they emphasized the fact the sun's going back down. Like, because I think there's a chance some of those people are up for 36 hours straight.
No chance.
And I think that would have been a cool thing.
They don't have time to keep these people partying for 36 hours. They have to get to the challenge almost immediately. There's no budget for that. Come on.
I think the challenge wasn't until like day two. It seemed like they had night one, a full day one, a full night two, and then the challenge.
Wait, you mean day three? You don't think the challenge was till day three?
Well, I mean, if they start on night one, like the whole thing was night one.
So there are 24 hours in a day. One time is night, one time is day.
I think they were up from the night one when TJ introduced. I think they were up all the way until night two. and then slept before the challenge.
And they just never changed their clothes. I think it's more likely, and evidence, like history on MTV has shown, it's just more likely they edited that out of order.
I mean, that's all obviously a very strong possibility, but I like to come up with conspiracy theories.
All right, so Felipe Shimon wants to know, is Johnny Bananas trying to get on Big Brother with all the expect the unexpecteds he's been dropping? And I know you don't watch Big Brother, but that's basically the big tagline that Julie Chen or Chenbot hits you over the head with. And it's like, well, I don't think he's trying to get on Big Brother, although speaking of phase two of his life, they are really hitting you over the head with, like, expect the most maniacal plot twist you can possibly expect. And it's like, is this really that unexpected considering we just watched this play out on Survivor?
I mean, it'll change everything. Everything. I mean, I could see Bananas on like a Big Brother type show.
You'd like to see Bananas on any show.
I'm going to tell you what, if Bananas went on Big Brother new season, I'd watch.
That's one.
You'd have one.
Count it.
You'd have plus one. Yeah, there you go.
Count it, CBS.
Slow and steady.
You heard it here first. Speaking of first things that we heard, we finally get a response to our question of why did Nani and Kahuta not ride off into the beautiful southern sunset?
Yeah, so it turns out Kahuta was the one who broke Nani's heart and ended it. And I mean, that's not exactly how I expected it to end or how I thought it ended. But I mean, it makes sense that they're not together because they're just two totally different people that it never even made sense that they were a couple in the real world in the first place.
I'm not sure what I'm gonna get from Nani this season, because we see a lot of her like emphasizing like, I don't want to hook up, even when I don't hook up everyone thinks I hook up and blah blah blah, and then we see this like really vulnerable moment where she's saying she's always dependent on her partner and now she's got someone dependent on her, like I'm good but I'm not great, I've never been this worried. Are we gonna see the rise of Nani here where when she's not doesn't have a Bananas to carry her through, that she's actually going to be taking a strong leadership role? Or once they get into big teams, is she going to fall into the pack?
I think she wants to fall back in the pack. She's always, even going back to her real world season in Vegas to all the way through the challenge, she's always been someone who has a very low self-esteem, which never really made sense because obviously she's this beautiful girl. She's pretty athletic and she seems to be liked by like a decent amount of people. So it was weird, always weird that she had like such a low self-esteem. And I don't see... That came out of nowhere.
Anytime you say something that could cause a stir, I'm going to play that.
But I don't see in like, what is this, year seven of her challenge career, all of a sudden her getting a backbone and wanting to be like the stand-up person for her team or her pair. So I don't see that happening here.
Well, she does seem really protective of her cousin. She wants to set a good example. She gets involved when her cousin's in a fight and she doesn't go ham. Like she checks T-Rain, she tells him what's up and she goes back to having her drink or whatever. So I hope that we continue to see this sort of strong Nani here, but I do think if she's back on a team with Kahuta and Bananas and, you know, people that she has trusted implicitly in the past, that she'll revert to just kind of, you know, doing what they want. But do you think her and Kahuta will hook up again?
I don't see it. I mean, I could see if it's in a situation where Nani maybe drunkenly tries to do it, but Kahuta, I don't see as that guy to do a rebound hookup with Nani again. I don't see that from him, but maybe from her, maybe, but not from Kahuta.
It's interesting that you say that, because in the first episode, Kahuta seems the one way more into Nani, just in terms of like saying that she's more attractive than she was just to aggravate him. And, you know, they're very flirtatious. He's like doing boop boops on her face or whatever. So I don't know. I think
he's doing what?
Like booping, like when, you know, and I don't know. He's like touching her face in some manner. So I don't know. I don't necessarily see Nani coming in with a trench coat and nothing underneath to like woo Kahuta. I kind of think if they both stick around long enough, it might just come out of them being close friends, them having a trust with each other, and them being bored in the house.
It's possible. I mean, I don't think it's going to happen. But I just think if it did, it would be from Nani. But I don't think it's going
to
happen anymore.
She also seems very determined not to hook up with anyone in the house. So we'll see, unless that's like a red herring. But
Your true colors always come out. Just like in Survivor and the challenge, you put enough booze in someone, it'll come out.
Just like in Survivor, if you put enough booze in
I met a survivor the way you go with well food. This is the same way that the survivor challenge people go with alcohol.
They usually go without food too. So one thing that's funny, and it's such a double standard for me, if like we had anyone else saying like, I broke her heart, like, oops, I would be like, what an asshole. Baka Hutta is just like, you know, I broke her heart. Sorry. Like, and I'm just like, oh, Kahana. But apparently he did her dirty, so. That's
good old country boy.
Maybe he's not as nice as we think.
That's Kahana, right in a nutshell. He can do whatever he wants, and everyone will shrug it off.
One hot take here is Anissa and Rihanna, switching gears a lot a bit, seem very fun to hang out with.
They seem very different. And there was a pretty decent age gap between them two, right? Didn't they say? Was that the one there was pretty decent age gap? Yeah.
I think Anissa's in Rihanna's probably in her early 20s and Anissa's in her early 30s.
Right. So I'm sure it seems like they just recently like connected as being friends. But yeah, I mean, they seem like they could be fun. I mean, I'm just at this point in Anissa's career, I've seen enough from Anissa, so I don't need to see much more. But I mean, I guess they seem kind of fun.
Let the hate pour in on how hypocritical Brian is to worship bananas. And when Anissa's actually bringing something interesting to this episode, he still says he's seen too much from her.
Because I think Bananas still always bring stuff interesting. Right. Because he's a threat to win.
Tangibly, Anissa is actually bringing interesting drama here by hooking up with Corey, which is hilarious. And I do think she's got some fun commentary, as does Corey weave throughout here. So I think it was a pretty good episode for her overall.
It was.
Did you notice this, by the way, when Christina is asking Thomas who his top three girls in the house are? T. Raines is in the background, macking on who I think is Camilla, but it was difficult to see.
I did not see that, but you had me at T-Rain's macking on someone. So
he says, what are you like sexually? Are you? And then I could not make out the rest of it.
Oh, my God. I need to know the rest of that question and her answer.
I mean, I think the juxtaposition of these two moments are just like showing how about the drama Christina and T-Rain's are about to be.
There was also a really funny scene where I think it was Nani who was talking to Bananas about like talking up Nicole, and Tony just walks in and then just sits right in between Nani and Nicole. That was also a good touch by him.
I like here Steven rejects Christina saying that she's flirting with him and I couldn't be less interested or whatever. In an alternate universe, if Steven like falls on the grenade, for lack of a better term, would Madison and Tony still be together today?
No, because I'll bet $100 million that Tony would have found someone else to hook up.
Fair enough.
Could have just been a producer. It didn't even have to be a cast member. He would have found someone to hook up with.
So here's the thing that bothers me about this. There are many things that bother me about this, but number one is Kahuta has a scene where he's saying, you know, Christina's bird dogging, which is like following him around, and he kind of puts the blame on Christina. But everything we've seen, Tony crosses the whole balcony to get to Christina and says like, oh, we're going to run down there and do it. And he's escalating it to sexually explicit territory. And we see him like locking her in against the balcony grate. So it's kind of like that. You cannot say Christina acted alone to get T. Raines, especially when we see her get rejected and bounce back pretty quickly from Steven. So I have a if Tony had said no even once, I feel like she would have bopped around to the next person.
Yeah, but the thing is, Tony's not saying no. That's the thing. Like if she was doing this like almost anyone else in the house, I would almost believe she probably just like followed him around. It doesn't take much to get Tony to be up to hooking up with you. So all she had to do was like smile at him, and Tony would be like, ooh. Who's this?
The other supremely gross thing here is the fact that she starts using him having a girlfriend as a flirting technique. Like, oh, first she's saying you have a girlfriend, I would never step those boundaries. And then she's like, you have a girlfriend, don't you? Like, this would be bad. And it's like, come on, don't use it as an excuse.
Yeah, she was making herself look like the forbidden fruit, which is, I mean, I guess it worked, but it's kind of like a sketchy move.
I hate this from Christina because I really liked her on Are You the One, and this is like leaving a bad taste in my mouth here.
But this just kind of just goes with the whole mindset we have with her, that she's kind of still in Are You the One mode and not in challenge mode, where it's all about trying to get the guy you want to hook up with, not putting yourself in a situation to build an alliance and focus on the challenge.
Yeah, but not manipulate, but not, you know, have relations with someone with a girlfriend. That's not what Are You the One's about. Like, I agree that her mindset was like, I'm drunk, let's party, let's hook up, these boys are cute. Mm-hmm. But that doesn't cover her on hooking up with someone with a boyfriend.
No, of course not. But that's just the right. Or a boyfriend, you never know.
Well, we know it's Madison, so. Yeah, so one thing that also pisses me off amongst everything else is he's like, oh, it's going to be so hard if we make it far and my hormones are raging. And it's like, are you 13, sir? Like, are you really going to blame your hormones for the fact that you're cheating on the person you may or may not know is pregnant, but you do know lives with you?
And the thing about Tony is, like, he's not even like a young kid. He's not like one of these newbies on the challenge who's coming straight out of college. Like, he's 22. He's like 27 or 28 years old. He was like one of the older ones on the real world. I think he like just hit the cutoff for age. So he's like much closer to his 30s than he is his 20s. And he's still acting like he's an 18 year old kid.
Yeah, no, it was pretty disgusting. And then what's makes him, I wrote in my notes an expletive. When Tony's like, we did not hook up. Like, I know what y'all can make it look like because I was so dumb and I wanted to be away from the camera. You're an effing loser. Obviously, wait, you hooked up.
Just go back. So you can't even curse in your notes. You literally wrote he's an expletive.
No, I wrote fucking loser in my notes, but I was trying to clean it up for the podcast.
Okay. I thought you like took notes in PG also.
Absolutely not.
Okay.
But yeah, and then what do you make of this Emily? This is a confirmed cry with Emily and Christina. Yes.
100%.
What do you make of this little interaction?
It was interesting that Christina, I think, completely misread why Emily was upset. Christina thought she was upset because she thought that Tony was going to like play with her heart and Christina was going to get hurt. That's not at all what Emily said. She's like, I don't want you to look like a slut on television. But Christina twisted that into being, she thought I was going to get hurt by Tony.
Yeah, no, that was like somebody who has absolutely no self-awareness or understanding of what happened. And it's unclear here if like, she's going to try to make it seem like she didn't hook up with Tony and that's why she's saying it, but she ultimately comes clean. So I don't know what her problem was. That was pretty dumb.
That was odd.
There has been mixed reception here on Twitter. As you might imagine, the Goons had something to say about this. For anyone who didn't watch Are You the One, Christina is like BFFs for life. On Are You the One, we're called the Goons. And some of them kind of made a fool of themselves on Twitter about this. Let me just pull that up.
Shocking.
Okay. So Jess had probably the most to say about this. She said, you are all effing bullshitters. Put yourself in her position. If you went on a reality show with someone you already hooked up with once, not knowing if he's really with his on and off again girlfriend, and you're single and just having fun, why effing not make out? They didn't have sex, so it's not that serious. I would have done it. That's why I'm defending her. It's effing 2015. People, shut the F up with you. Wouldn't have done that. Please, all lies. If you want to blame someone, blame the cheater, not the free spirit just having fun in the moment. Shit gets extremely stressful on the challenge, especially being a rookie. So everyone talking shit can kindly F off. Couple issues here. One, the headline of this is that Christina and Tony have already hooked up, which is the most interesting.
And also, when you really think about it, not that surprising.
No, not surprising, but interesting nonetheless. Two, what does 2015 have to do with it? And three, Jess, you have no idea what it's like to be on the challenge. So, you know, good looking out trying to defend your friend, but like coming out a little too strong.
Yeah, I don't know what 2015 means. I guess this is the age where you can hook up whatever you want without consequences. I don't know. But
then
sure.
She starts giving Madison advice on Twitter, which would piss me off to no end if, like, someone who just defended someone who cheated on me was giving me life advice on Twitter. I mean, right. Madison is too nice a person on Twitter, apparently.
I mean, I like Jess, but from her season, she's not the one to be giving relationship advice at all.
And then Ellie took a little bit of a different perspective. She said, you can't put the blame on one person when they cheat. That's like me saying he's not single, but I am. Bull effing shit. That's whore shit. And then she said, don't get me wrong. Christina's my bitch, but I don't condone the behavior. And then she said, I'm gonna be straight up. Tony's a dog and it takes two to tango. F that S. Christina needs to make wiser choices. Brianna simply said, people make mistakes. So a breadth of perspectives.
I just like the fact that we're bringing dog back into our vernacular in 2015.
If Ellie said it, then it doesn't count because she just does her own thing. A lot of words right. that she uses should not be brought back into the vernacular. So
did she spell it as D-O-G or D-A-W-G?
D-O-G. He's a dog. Okay. Come on.
I'm just curious. You never know with her.
All right. So then we go back to nighttime for some more Tony drama.
Yes. The comment heard around the world. Him referring to Larissa as short and weak and probably the first one to be eliminated.
Well, we never hear him say that.
No, that's the word on the street.
Larissa,
I tend to believe
Larissa claims she overheard Tony saying that. And then Tony has absolutely no defense and is just the most offensive person in the entire world. So yeah, clearly he's guilty.
Yeah, his first move was saying he completely respects Camilla, which, I mean, sure, you can go with that, but that's not going to stop the wrath of Camilla if you insult her sister.
Well, yeah, now then she's like, oh, so my sister's a liar? Which, like, I mean, he was doomed from the beginning, as he should have been.
In that point, when you have, like, Camilla coming after you, just admit to whatever you did and just move on, because you're not going to be able to get out of it.
And then what's amazing here is Camilla, the fact that she isn't getting heated and Nani later doesn't really get heated just shows how little they give a crap about Tony. Like, they'll settle their business with him, but if they really cared, like if Bananas had said this or if someone they felt they had a relationship with said this or they felt had merit, they would be losing their shit.
Right. I mean, it's that whole thing of the veterans having this kind of complex over the rookies that think they're just like not even just like better than them, just like way above them in like society. It's like, oh, look at this rookie, doesn't mean anything, who cares whatever he says, he's a rookie, who cares. And that's what I always love about the challenge, especially in the early, like the first couple episodes, that's really what really comes out, is the rookies are always like shunned, like they have no say in anything. It's like, oh, he doesn't know what he's talking about.
Yeah. And then Tony like outdoes himself here, saying it's a typical woman move, you're trying to be level-headed, and what do? They're dramatic. The fact that any woman like willingly like stands within 10 feet of this human is beyond me, much less the fact that they like claw hand over foot to get with him and be cheated on. I mean, this guy is, I'm not afraid to say this, I try not to like make personal attacks, but from what we've seen, and maybe we don't know, who knows, guy's a dumb piece of crap. Like, he's just dumb because you could just see that he can't handle himself in the verbal argument with Camilla. He can't handle himself with a verbal argument with Nani and Nicole. And so he walks away from that fight because he gets outwitted. And then he gets physical with his brother to deal with it because he doesn't know how to deal with it. At 27 years old, you need to know how to deal with this kind of stress, either verbally or walk away from it. It's like really pathetic that he just like his head gets all like confused because people are like making sense. So he just like lets his fist fly.
But that's like what is going to make Tony such a great addition to this world, is that he doesn't know how to deal with any of this stuff. So he's going to have to go through at least a couple of these seasons where he's, I mean, who knows if he ever learns how to deal with it, but at least in the early going, he's going to be doing this shit all the time. And that's what's going to make him great and a perfect addition.
Yeah. So this is no surprise. We look for really different things in terms of who we like on the challenges. So like for me, Corey was the breakout star of this episode because when he wasn't afraid to step into drama but he spoke well and could verbally handle himself with his, which is much more interesting to me than a babbling idiot. And he's playful. He was a funny narrator through the season. He seems to really get what's going on. And he was hooking up with Anissa, which is hilarious. So for me, like, that's the kind of drama I like to see. Even Nicole, to me, was a standout to be able to put T-Reigns in his place. But for someone like Tony to just be like, like, I don't, that's not what I like to see.
See, I love to see two brothers give each other self DUI tests and then throw each other against the wall and start punching each other. That's great for me. So that's what makes this great.
Yeah, no,
we focus on different things.
What Shane said, that was hilarious. I'm not discounting Shane. I'm just, for me, Tony's not adding anything except things to be angry about.
That's fair, but he also. But the thing about Tony is he sparks the greatness in other people. So Shane's moment wouldn't have happened without Tony being a delusional idiot, and that's what Tony brings. He helps emphasize the great characteristics of everyone else in the house.
Yeah, that's fine, but I think Shane would be fine on his own too. I'm not relying on Tony to bring the best out of Shane. I think Shane is a character unto himself. Sure. All right, so. Bringing to the Shane and Tony issue at hand. Mm-hmm. What I don't agree here with Shane, which is the last time I think I don't agree with Shane, is that he says like he thought Tony was going to hit her from the look in his eye or whatever. I don't agree. Like, I'll say a lot of crap about Tony, which I just did, but I will not say that at any point did I think Tony was going to hit one of those girls.
I didn't think so either. I'm like... I agree that Tony is like a delusional douchebag, but there's a big difference between that and then being someone who will like hit a woman. And I don't think that's what Tony is. I don't think that's anything that will happen. But do you think this is a little bit of a Chekhov's gun situation with Shane being so upset at Tony for almost hitting someone that we might see Shane do something in the future?
No, I don't think Shane's going to hit anyone. I mean, look, who knows? But I don't even think Shane, like, I think you can tell that Shane didn't do anything on The Real World like that, did he?
I mean, it was. I think it was only on for like an episode, right?
Right. No, I'm just making sure there wasn't like a scene like that. Anyway.
I don't think so.
I feel like Shane, you could tell Tony was going to pop off here. I think Shane does more with his words than anything. Like, I think Shane maybe could get in someone's face, but I don't see Shane throwing a punch, especially not at a girl, especially because he was so intense about it. I think we had to see this moment because it is what ultimately led Tony to snatch up Shane, as he says. I don't think that this is like, you know, foreshadowing Shane getting violent, but you know, who knows?
Right. What I loved about the aftermath of the fight is the fact that Nani and Nicole are the two people that have to calm down Shane, who are probably maybe the two most lunatic people in the house besides maybe Tony and Shane. So Nani probably has so much experience over the years of people calming down her. So I wonder how many of the lines she heard over the years, she's now like passing out her wisdom to Shane.
See, what I loved is Shane just totally shows Tony up. Shane has everything over Tony, like by 100,000%.
Oh, absolutely. And that maybe that's why Tony is always like, it seems like they have a pretty violent past. So maybe there is a little bit of a jealousy that, you know, Shane's like maybe I think Shane's the younger brother, right? He's the younger one. So like he sees like this younger brother who has his life more together and he can't do what he does.
I mean, I don't know anything about Shane's life, but yeah, I don't. What's interesting, too, is when you bring up that he's talking to Nani and Nicole, what Shane says is like, Tony didn't hit me, but that's the closest he ever came. And I'm like, no, you both hit each other. I don't know why he's like classifying this as just he snatched me up.
Yeah, I mean, he threw a couple punches in there, too. Like, I know he didn't initiate the violence, but I mean, he did throw a couple punches. So he can't be acting all innocent in this.
No, and I don't think he is. I just think like Nani's like, oh, my God, did he hit you? And Shane's like, no, no, no. And it's like, yes, yes, yes. You both hit each other for sure.
But then yes, 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 I hit him back.
Right. No, no, no. I'm not even trying to like bring that up. I'm just saying it's like crazy that Shane's recounting of this is like, he didn't hit me. I'm like, well, if there weren't like five dudes and a producer, maybe you both would be bruised right now. Like you for sure were hitting each other.
Right. And I think it wasn't it Jamie who broke them up or at least tried to break them up first.
Yeah, I think we had a question about that I didn't pull, but someone said that.
So he's getting his prison work in early.
And then that brings us right to the challenge because TJ does a fake out that I think fooled a lot of people. You know, first he says, first of all, you know, Shane and Tony, we don't like violence. I don't care what your relationship is, but we're not going to do anything about it. It's fine.
Right. I mean, compared to the Probst fake out from this week, this was obviously miles ahead. But this one also had the added bonus of the fact that the Abram and his brother spectrum coming into this game at some point is hanging over this season. So it's like, when someone's getting kicked out? When is someone getting kicked out? When is someone getting kicked out? And I thought it was going to be this moment. I thought 100% that they were going to be gone.
I mean, the MTV rules of editing are like, if they're making it seem like something's going to happen and they go to commercial, it's not going to happen when they come back. So like, right. If somebody is losing in the pit, they're going to be winning the whole thing once they go to commercial.
Absolutely.
So this was no different. A couple questions from the listeners about this. Katrin Stutz wants to know, why weren't Tony and Shane sent home right away? And related, Kristen Kinnar wants to know, what happened to the zero tolerance policy on violence? Did they just want to keep the drama around? Not that I'm mad. They're great entertainment.
I really don't know why. I mean, they've had an inconsistent past in terms of what gets someone kicked out. And I mean, think of a lot of it has to do with who's doing the violence, when in the season they're doing the violence. Do they have a replacement on hand? So, I mean, all that comes into play. Maybe the fact that they're brothers and on the same team matters. So, like, if Tony and, like, Corey got into a fight, they might be more prone to get kicked out because they're on opposite teams. So, there's no real rhyme or reason as to whenever someone get kicked out of the challenge. There's definitely no zero tolerance policy. That's 100% certainty, though.
See, it's, to me, a couple of things about what you said. It would be much easier to send the pair home and have a replacement pair than send the two, Corey and Tony, home and their pairs. Like, I think it was pretty convenient to be sent home that it was a pair that you can just, like, cleanly replace. One thing that I think is confusing for anyone who watched Are You the One, Mike at the end of the show was sent home right towards the end of the season for, like, throwing a girl by the neck, which was a very violent act. But maybe this is why they pitched that as, like, oh, Mike sent himself home because knowing that this was going to come and these dudes threw punches, and I'm not comparing the violence, but this was at least just as, you know, just as damaging physically to the two of them, that they were like, all right, well, let's pretend Mike sent himself home so that we can then justify keeping Tony and Shane later in the season, in the next
That's definitely a possibility. I mean, I'm always of the one that leans more towards, I'd rather them be lenient in terms of kicking people out. I just, mainly because I don't want, I think that for the challenge, it's a lot of fun seeing those type of situations and seeing that type of violence and passion spill through. So I don't want that to be completely stripped from the show, because I think that'll lose a lot of, really decent amount of the draw. So I don't want it completely stripped away. So I'd always rather them lean more towards trying to keep them in.
See, we look for different things. Like, I'm not looking for these dudes to punch each other for my entertainment. And at the same time, like, I do think the threat of going home does keep a lot of things more subdued than they would be, in terms of, like, it goes to a point, but then you see, like, in the club, you see Vinny and Corey getting really close to each other, but they don't hit each other. And I think if the challenge reduced its policy or reduced its tolerance for sending people home, that would have escalated. And I think there are probably many times we can point to in history of the challenge where things did not escalate to violence, and that's because they know they can get sent home for it. And so I think that's important to keep the show from being celebrity deathmatch. And the other thing is, I know, like, Rob says a lot in his podcast about Survivor that while there are, let's just say, rules about the hidden immunity idol, if a player violates those rules and it makes for better TV, like, they'll probably let the better TV ride and trump any of the rules. And I think that that applies here. And in every reality TV show, if someone's going to break the rules, or if they're going to break their own rules for the sake of making a better television show, at the end of the day, the integrity of the game is not as important as making good TV. And I think that's what we saw happen here.
Yeah, that's definitely part of it. Absolutely.
So the challenge, Water Battle, not a great water name.
Not a great name, but it's, I think, I mean, we'll get to the execution of the challenges in terms of how they do it. But I thought the challenge itself was actually pretty well done. I mean, it's a very simple thing. There's a giant mud, quote unquote, mountain or hill that you have to run up. There's a shower on the top. You have to fill up your bucket, race back down, and fill it into your team bucket. Highest bucket filling wins, lowest bucket filling loses.
So we got a couple of questions about the fact that this was run in two heats, men and women. So Gina Marie Palmieri Marsick, did you guys understand what the difference was between the guys and the girls heat? And then she went on to say she couldn't really tell how the teams would win or lose and what difference it made. Nick Sabetta wanted to know, did the women have any real chance of winning this challenge? Because it looked like the setup was exactly the same. My understanding was that it was just so that they didn't have, like, big behemoth men shoving into Brianna or, like, Jenna and flinging them off the mountain.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was basically the only difference. I mean, there was also just, like, you just couldn't really have 28 people on that mountain, no matter their size. It's not big enough to hold all people. So they had to do it in different heats. And also, yeah, you don't really want Leroy going head to head with Nicole in this situation. Right. That's not going to end well.
And then one thing I didn't like, and this is why the format is pretty much weak from here on out for this episode, is like, I don't like when there's too much left up to chance. Like, yes, there are its advantages to having a guy girl team because the other gender opponent can, or other gender teammate can help coach you, like we saw with Kara. And if you're girl girl or guy guy, you can maybe help each other. But in the reality of it, like, is the gender really did affect this challenge in terms of the guys seem to be better than most of the girls at getting up the hill. And so you were really disadvantaged if you had a girl girl team based on the results. Mm-hmm. You know, that's not my opinion.
Right.
That's pretty much what happened. So I just don't like when, yes, every combination has its advantages and disadvantages, but too much was unequal for my liking here.
Yeah, 100% agree. And that's why this has to just be like a 1 week thing. You just, because the type of challenges that they want to do on a week to week basis, you can't be having a guy, guy, girl, girl, guy, girl teams. It just is going to get too much unbalance throughout the season. That it's, I mean, I don't care about things being fair, but it just, it's not even, it's going to be enjoyable to watch knowing that some teams just have no chance of winning, or it's just a complete mismatch of what's going on. So yeah, this is why this has to be a 1 week thing, and they have to go back just doing the legit battle of the bloodlines.
And we've seen it in the past. I mean, we saw Nisa and Rachel be the only girl-girl team on X's, but at the end of the day, like, this just was really clunky, and I think it's because they knew this was a 1 week thing, but I don't think it was worth, you know, the juice wasn't worth the squeeze here. I think they should have gone right into, you know, splitting up the pairs.
Yeah, and I think this challenge could have been a really good challenge if this was like a week two thing where it's, you know, you have one team go all at once and you have another team go all at once, or you have like half the teams go at the same time. So like, I really enjoyed this challenge. I thought it was a pretty well executed one. It's like a perfect challenge competition. So I wish they kind of did this at like a later date.
Yeah, I mean, you can still have the girls' heat and the guys' heat. It would just be each team has an equal amount of guys,
right,
and girls,
yeah, exactly,
so then it's fine.
Exactly.
And then what's interesting here, I think the most interesting thing of the highlight of this is that Kara makes a big game move here where we get a confessional of Kahuta saying, like, they really just want to finish in the middle of the pack. It would be great to win, but, like, just want to not lose. And then... Right. Kara notices that Johnny and Vince are going to win, and not liking that, she teams up with Kellyanne and they start directing their bloodlines to fill Kahuta and Jill's container. And I assume it's probably because Kahuta was the next person in the lead that they felt they could work with. But it doesn't seem like Jill's involved in this plan, and it definitely doesn't seem like Kahuta even really knows what's going on.
No, yeah, I mean, I think Dinah Kahuta have a confessional. He's like, all of a sudden, my bucket is like double the size. And he's like, what the hell? What happened? What happened here? So, yeah, they seem like they were definitely unwilling participants. And what I really liked about this is that normally in the challenge, when there's a guy-girl pairs, it seems like the guy is normally the very dominant player in like the strategic decisions and all that stuff. But here, I love seeing Kara and Kellyanne dictate orders to their guy partners and then just fully going through with it, because that's not something we normally see on the challenge. So I really enjoyed seeing that.
So Edward Morris wants to know, did Kara, Maria and Kellyanne make the right play by having their partners help beat Bananas, or was that them playing too hard, too fast?
When it first happened, I was like, oh, this is like a really good thing. Like, oh, look at Kara really making moves. And it's not that I think Kara and Bananas would ever really be working together, but I think you could always have like a couple week buffer period where you're like waiting for the calm before the storm. Kind of like, I think it was either last season or two seasons ago with Wes and Bananas, where they're like buying each other out. They're waiting a couple weeks before you actually make the move. You know, you're going to be up against each other, but you know, let's go through some of the rookies, some of the You Are the One people before we really go head to head and start targeting each other. So I think it probably was a little too early to start really boom hard line in the sand between them two.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's drawing a line that's already been drawn, so it's not that big of a deal. I mean, you know, by your comparison, if she were to say win this challenge and then throw Bananas in, I mean, whoa, you know, I would totally be like way too soon, because that's a direct, you know, shot fired at him. Mm-hmm. This is kind of like, I don't want you to win And so I'm going to have someone else win, but I'm not going to be the one to win so that I don't have to take the shot either and have blood on my hands. Like, it was an okay move here. I think if anything, it's putting her more at risk because it might be showing Bananas that not only will Kara not work with you, but she'll actively try to sabotage you, which right. then you can't surmount. I mean, if there are more challenges like this, you know, everybody's against Bananas and can keep him from winning, which yeah. we've seen collusion like that in the past. But ultimately, I think this is kind of like a net neutral move. I think it's like fine that that Bananas didn't win. And I still don't think that if Bananas wins next week, he's putting Kara in.
No, I don't think so. Probably not either. Because I mean, I don't see who you want Kara to go up against. You go, oh, this is someone who can really beat Kara. Like, there's maybe one or two people who could even knock her off, and you're not going to risk that week two. So, yeah, I don't see Kara being thrown in. Maybe if it sticks with these partners, maybe Jamie could be thrown in. But even that is still a little dicey.
Especially when you haven't seen what the pit looks like in terms of, like, are there going to be three competitions that repeat? You know, sometimes you can account for that.
Right, yeah, we don't know that. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so Kyle Jalil B wants to know, do you guys think Bananas and Vince will be the villains of this season?
I mean, villain in terms of them being like the people that someone always wants to see beat and the guy that they're always like going after to see the king of the throne. But so that in the sense that villain, but not in the evil tormenting villain that he's been in the past where he made Kellyanne and, you know, Evelyn almost be put in a psychiatric home after the island. So I don't see that as villain, but I mean, yeah, he's like the main target. So he's sort of the villain.
Yeah, I was going to say depends on the definition of villain, just in terms of like, he will be the focal point of like potentially rallying every single other person in the house against him. But mm-hmm. it will be interesting to see Bananas in this situation. You know, he can't just rely on Leroy if that is even still a strong connection for him. It will be interesting to see almost like when Wes like rallies the rookies for him, Bananas is almost in a similar position of having to kind of make the best of a bad situation socially.
Right. I mean, Bananas really hasn't had much of a crew the last couple seasons. So he's kind of been a little battle tested in the sense of people really going after him.
All right. So Kahut and Jill win with some help from, you know, Jamie and Anthony.
Just quickly. I just love that. Yeah. Just quickly to Jill having, I think it was either confessional before or after the challenge. And she had to have subtitles when she was speaking English. Like that's an all time move.
So they win, subtitles and all. And Jenna and Brianna ultimately lose and they'll be going right to the pit. Allison Smith wants to know, great name, by the way, whose athletic ability were you surprised by, better than expected and worse than expected?
Worse, definitely Leroy. I mean, Candace, I know Candace really put them in the hole, but it didn't seem like Leroy did that well. I mean, based on his accord, it seemed like he was really struggling. We saw him struggling. And I mean, this is really where Leroy has to shine. Like, we know his swimming prowess is not that great unless he found some magical new YouTube videos that he can grow his swimming ability. But this is like the land competitions, him running up a mud mountain is really where Leroy has to shine. And it didn't look like he did.
So the thing about... Oh, was anyone better than you expected?
Oh, yeah. I'll give Anissa some credit. Like, she actually had like a much better premiere than I thought she would have. I don't think the rest of her season is going to be anywhere close to this, but she did pretty well. I liked her little split move going down the mountain in full split. That's very impressive.
You would. So I'm going to give some props to Christina and Emily here. They seem to be doing very well in this challenge, and I usually write people off by size, which is not always the case. So good on them. And I was pretty disappointed by Nani here. I mean, Nani and Nicole came in second, and Nani's been through the ringer on these shows. Like, Nani should be ready to go in this kind of thing. I mean, especially the first challenge, you're not tired, you know, you're ready to go. And she was pretty pathetic. One thing I will say in Leroy's defense, because I love Leroy, it's totally biased. No, Candace did set Leroy up for failure. I mean, Candace totally ate it on this challenge. And for Leroy to not come in the bottom two, we don't know really how he finished, but right. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. Yes, like, he was disappointed himself, but at the same time, like, he kept them out of the bottom. So he didn't come close to winning, but I mean, he basically did the whole challenge on his own. And, you know, at least two teams were worse than him.
Yeah. And I mean, we've seen Leroy in the past when he either by himself or with a partner where you know, he doesn't even sometimes try to win a lot of these because he doesn't want to put himself in the position of power and having to create enemies. So he's always want to be the one kind of in the middle. You know, we saw it in free agents. He would actively go to the draw. So that way he doesn't have to be thought of as someone to be thrown in. He just likes trying to slide under the radar a little bit. And that's what I kind of thought he might be doing in this challenge. But the only reason why I want to say he didn't do well is because his confessionals, he was just so angry at himself for struggling so much. So that's why I thought he didn't do too well.
So the winners here have to pick, get informed that they have to pick one team with a girl on it to go into elimination. This, and it's pretty weak here, that it's just like, oh, girls lost, so it's a girls elimination. And we got a couple questions about that. So Will Simon wants to know, is this the most unbalanced format for a season of the challenge ever? It seems unlikely a guy or girl pair will ever get last in the challenge unless the eliminations alternate gender each week. And then Emily Zitterkopf says, what is going on?
Just amen. In life, what's going on?
Yeah. Amen, sister girl. There's no way they can continue alternating male-female eliminations. Any idea on what the format is actually going to be? Or are they just going to change the rules as they go so it fits what MTV feels like making happen? That's never happened.
The format has to be that this is just a one-week thing. Because, that you might not see two guy teams lose. Like, it's just not even fair for the guy-girl teams that they would be up for elimination every week where the guy-guy or girl-girl teams would have a week off. So that doesn't make any sense. So, yeah, so it has to be next week. They're going to the teams, and then you can have a guy elimination, then a girl elimination, and guy elimination. So that has to be the format. That's the only thing that makes sense.
Yeah, no, this one-week episode was a real mistake, this one-week format. Alex Panda Moran wants to know, is the format flawed in that the co-ed pairs are more susceptible to be thrown in since same-sex pairs have a chance at safety if an opposite gender same-sex pair finishes last in the challenge, as shown by this episode?
Yeah, absolutely. That's just another reason on the many lists that this has to be a one-week thing.
All right, so Tommy Bahama and Jill are deliberating, and their logic here is that they want to throw someone in who will lose to Jenna and Jill to Jenna and Brianna because they feel that Jill can beat both Jenna and Brianna, which I think is dead on. So they settle on Christina and Emily.
Yeah, that logic seems very sound. I mean, I think Jill can almost beat nearly all the girls. Like, there's probably like a handful that she would struggle with. So I think she would absolutely be able to beat Jen and Brianna. And I like the logic. You ideally, unless you're really trying to make a move, the person you throw in, you really want them to lose just so you don't have them coming back after you.
And one thing here is, well, Edward Morris wants to know, should Cahut and Jill have gone for taking out Leroy and Candace, knowing that Candace would have to compete?
I understand that logic that you can go after maybe a quote unquote strong team, but I guess that could be to be determined. But I don't think it's really worth the risk. I mean, throwing in Christina and Emily, like, there's basically no chance that if this sticks as a pair, like, they're ever going to win a challenge and coming after you. But in a certain situation, I can see Leroy just going absolutely ham on a challenge and winning one. And as you mentioned, Leroy is someone who will absolutely remember who threw him in every moment. And you don't need to have Leroy on your back at this moment. Throwing in Christina and Emily is just a very simple, basic vote that is not going to hurt you at all. And in the first vote, there's no problem with that.
So Edwin Morris also wants to know, if Nani and Nicole finish last, does that change Cahut and Jill's picks?
No, I think they'll still probably throw in Christina, because now even more so that they want, I think it's differently, because here they want Jenna to come back because they want to be able to, Jill can beat both of them in elimination. But with Nani, I think they want Nani to come back because, I mean, I think Cahut views Nani as an ally, so he wouldn't really want an ally to be voted to get eliminated anyway. And no. Jill could probably beat both of them anyway.
Totally agree. And Cahut is, he's not about the drama. And I don't think, you know, week one, he's going to go like slit his ex's throat. I mean, they still clearly have some sort of a friendship, at least on the show. And I don't think he's about to go make a power move week one, especially against Nani.
Definitely not.
Were you surprised here to see Jill giving the justification for throwing in Christina and Emily?
No, I mean, I feel like TJ just sometimes, did he specify to Jill to answer, or did she just start speaking?
He may have off camera, but I think when we saw it, she was just speaking.
Yeah, usually he'll dictate to like say, just the one person say it, but I mean, I wouldn't read too much into that.
That's totally when we get the amazingness of him asking John A, I must say Johanna, John A, and like she immediately tries to like look at Zach, and he's right. Like, no, John A.
I mean, him going to Jill, though, like Jill has no problem standing up for herself and saying whatever needs to be said. So yeah, I don't think there's anything there.
I don't know. She like wavers on it. She's like, I feel so bad about this. And, You know, they're the only pair with two rookie players that have never done this before. And, you know, whatever. Right. So Bananas calls this a battle royale. And Just when the strategic tension was building, we hit the Turkish club scene.
Yeah, this is what the challenge does best. You know, they have peaks and valleys of drama, competitiveness. And then, like, usually through the challenge, sometimes the challenge runs a little long, that kind of gets a little dull. And then this deliberation was super boring because it was obvious it was going to be Christine and Emily. So really need a nice little boost for this episode. And bam, let's get him to a club. Let's get them all drunk and let's see what happens.
And we see Kellyanne, like, next to Dario, grabbing the railing and, like, throwing her body around in ways I've never seen before. So, good on her.
And I mean, we saw that in, like, the twerking scene. When one of them, like, twerked, all of a sudden Kellyanne started gyrating and she was having a seizure to celebrate. So, yeah, Kellyanne has no problem moving her body in interesting ways.
And the couples here are no surprise. They were all, like, spoiled in the lead up to the show that Mitch and Larissa... Oh, I'm sorry. Mitch and Rihanna. Silly me.
Tricks are for kids.
Anissa and Corey and Dario and Kellyanne are the main headlines here.
Right. They're the pairs that hook up and start dancing. And I mean, that's good for all of them. But like I would say the real story from the club scene is the Vince fight with Corey.
Here, may I point out, which is started by Anissa telling Corey that Vince is saying that he either made out with or slept with Nani. And Corey is not having any of this.
Which I don't really understand because Nani's pretty attractive, right? Why would that be a bad thing to say you hooked up with Nani?
Corey seems very principled. Like, he's like, as a man, you should come up to me and say, hey, I heard this. And it's like, first of all, you're not doing that. But second of all, it seems more just like the fact that someone has his name in their mouth is what's irritating him most of all. So he gets the whole gang together. He goes first to Nani to rile her up.
Poor Nani.
And then to Vince, where he completely displays intelligence. I'm talking about Corey now, in case there was any confusion. An ability to make a logical argument, even when inebriated. These are all things I look for. And he's willing to, and he narrates it perfectly, saying, I'm puffing my chest, he's puffing his chest. And I thought, this is the kind of drama I want to see, where it doesn't escalate, but it gets right there. And it's so stupid.
Yeah, there was a weird cut when it went to commercial. Like, all of a sudden, Banana's head like started floating in the background. They like zoomed in on him and froze it. I thought for there's a chance that it would come back and Corey would like try to punch Vince, and it said hit Bananas by accident. And I was like, oh my god, is this actually gonna happen? But yeah, that's
some fan fiction.
Yeah, very fan fiction. But that's what goes in my head during these commercials. So that's what happens.
And then Vince like admits it to. He's like, I never saw him and Nani do anything, but I said it because he walks around like his shit don't stink. And it's like, that's a pretty juvenile thing to do. And then he then starts saying, like, you're a personal trainer, right, bitch. Like, that's an insult. And Anissa later tells us that Vince is also a personal trainer.
Oh, that's... Maybe he was saying, like, he's a better personal trainer? Because Anissa's like, oh, he's a personal trainer, but he doesn't have the body that you do. It's like, oh, okay.
Well, so then we get the second person crying because their bloodline is rumored to be a slut. So Nicole, we get a confirmed cry from Nicole here. Allison Smith wants to know, do you think Nani and Bananas will be allies this season since they were partners last season? They don't seem as close anymore, especially with Vince starting the rumor.
Yeah, I mean, what was interesting is even before they were a pair, I don't really remember Bananas and Nani even being that close like to begin with. That's why it was always a shock when they were thought of as exes. But I think Nani views Bananas more as an ally as Bananas views Nani. Like, when push comes to shove, if Bananas need to, I think he would vote Nani in, and I don't think Nani would do that to Johnny.
I think Nani has shown some strategic thinking, and I do think that she would take the shot, especially if influenced by influential people around her, I think she would do it. But even if they didn't have a past before exes, I mean, working as a team together, certainly. And there was a long period of time where they were just living, the two of them, in Battle of the Exiled or the Exile Pass. Yeah. So, I mean, even like on Fresh Meat, like those, you have a bond with your pair. Even people who hate each other before, right, come back for Rivals and leave with a bond sometimes. Mm-hmm. So
Cara, Maria, and Laurel were rivals, and now they're like best friends.
And Nisa and Diem, yeah, same thing. So we will see. It might be interesting. We're not really getting much of a storyline. We're not like hearing much about their backstory, so I don't know that will really pay off at all. But Haley Strong put it out on Twitter that there was a return of the cute puke, where Candace is throwing up on the bus and she says like, oh, I had a throw up moment, but I still look cute. I'm willing to say she looked dead.
Yeah, that was not a cute puke. No one was looking at Candace's ass when she was puking, as Cheyenne would want people to do.
And then following up with all the madness going on in the house, Lori Delgado wants to know, when did Anissa start hooking up with dudes?
She's always been bi, right?
Yeah, I believe so. I think she had her most famous relationship was with Rachel, but right. I don't think she was exclusively into women. I think there's been some
guys in between, yeah.
What I think is funny about the hookups that happened in the house, Rihanna and Mitch really display the difference between a reality show veterans hookup and a noob hookup. Like, Rihanna and Mitch are like being stupid and playful with the cold cuts and, you know, going to cuddling. And
which
like
is super disgusting, by the way. Eating cold cuts just straight, that's super disgusting.
Well, Kellyanne and Dario and Anissa and Corey, they just get right to the business.
Right.
They don't need to like fool around with your raw turkey and your laughing and the lights on. No.
Oh my God. Have you ever just eaten cold cut plain?
A friend of mine has. She used to call it turkey roll-ups in college. It was just like a piece of cheese, a piece of turkey, and some mustard and mayo.
Rolled like up. Why would she get bread just to like make it a sandwich?
Ain't nobody got time for that.
I enjoyed the little song. I don't remember what song it was. It seemed like it was like a Macarena type song, but obviously it wasn't that. But I like the montage of the hookups as they all entered the house.
I totally don't remember that, because by now I was already focused on the impending elimination.
Right.
I just love the Shane drops. Like, in case you're worried, I'm going to have drops all season. It's probably just going to be these three drops.
And that's probably fine, because those are great. And also we need the Camilla. You're going to die.
I'll work on that.
But yeah, this is the classic elimination of Jenna and Brianna against Christina and Emily. One that I will 100% be telling my grandkids about.
I hope my grandkids never watch MTV. So, quick question from Alex Pandemaran. He wants to know, what would be your ranking of the elimination names? The pit, the arena, the jungle, the gulag, or the dome?
I love the gulag. I love when they use words that have no real meaning outside of the challenge, like gulag. Like, what is gulag even? I don't even know. Like, gulag does not come up in everyday vernacular. Like, the arena, the pit. Like, those are, like, typical, like, competitiveness names. But, like, the gulag. That's so challenge.
Yeah, I mean, I would prefer if the pit was like somewhat set up like a pit, you know, like if the audience, you know, the rest of the people who are safe would be like 25, 30 feet above the challengers. But it's basically just like a dirt patch.
Yeah, I wish they had like a Leslie Knope in the background trying to turn it into a park.
So Tony here has the nerve to say that he's rooting for Christina to go home. What an asshole.
More Tony. Tony, in every situation where you think he could do like a decent thing, he just does the complete wrong thing and blows it up. And it's Tony. That's why he's a great addition.
In your opinion. Alex Kidwell. No, I think he's fine, but I just wish he was a better person. So
that would make him not fine and not good.
Or more intelligent. So Alex Kidwell wants to know, what did you think about Tony basically playing 3 weeks worth of the challenge in 48 hours?
It's great. Someone on Twitter said that he basically completed a challenge bingo in the first episode. I thought that was perfect.
So the actual elimination, I actually thought it was pretty good. I mean, from what I hear about CrossFit, this is similar to CrossFit, where they're popping the rope over zigzag poles to clip it onto a post. It was like pretty boring, but I thought it was like a pretty good physical challenge.
Yeah, I mean, if this is a season where they do have like a cycle of eliminations, I wouldn't mind seeing this one again. I thought it was pretty decent. I think it creates good drama and opportunities for like comebacks and people struggling. So yeah, I didn't mind this one.
One thing here, it's a pretty good showing from Christina. She has the early lead and then ultimately like gasses out towards the second to last post. I'm disappointed in Jenna here because she has to have been working out. She's a model. She was prepared. Christina said ahead of time, and everyone has said that they had her spot before she was an alternate. And it's like, you should be killing this girl who has no upper body strength, hasn't worked out for the challenge. You're a model. You're dating Zach. Like, it's pretty pathetic the fact that Christina almost beat Jenna here.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed like the Jenna's height was really what helped put her over the edge. Like, it seems just Christina, just her arms were not long enough to generate enough torque to get the rope over those last two poles. And for Jenna, it's like, she just seemed like so frazzled in the beginning. Like, even like her confessional saying she's confused by this challenge. Like, this to me cannot be more simple. Like, there's going to be more confusing stuff that happens. It's literally just pushing a rope over a pole. It doesn't get more basic than that. And somehow Jenna was confused. And I guess maybe as it went on, her nerves kind of settled in and she was able to do it. But I mean, this is not like that great of a performance. To me, it didn't prove that she was not a layup or anything like that.
Well, what we are seeing is classic Jenna, because like right before she's like, Brianna blew it for us in the challenge. I'm not going to let her blow it for us again. And like, that's totally something she would have said about Jay. Right. She just has these blunt like digs at her partner. And I thought it was just because Jay was her ex, but apparently not. Family gets it too.
Yeah. I'm not even 100% sure Jenna did all that well in the challenge anyway. So I don't think she could be putting much blame.
So Alex Al-Sassid wants to know, with that elimination, has TJ's standards of getting a you killed it gone down over the years?
Yeah, I mean, I think he always likes to just drop it in the first episode, just like remind everyone of his catchphrase. But he needs to like use it when someone actually kills it. And Jenna barely beating Christina in elimination is not a you killed it moment. It's just not.
I've been losing interest in the you killed it phenomenon at least since last season. I mean, I'm over it. Like, I feel like he burnt it out last season. I can't think of specific examples. I just remember getting irritated. Mm-hmm. So I hope what you're saying is true and he's going to lay off it for a while. And even if like Bananas took out Thomas, like, that's not a reason for you killed it either. Like, you killed it is like Leroy and Bananas going head to head, or someone you don't expect to do well taking out someone who's a huge threat. Not just you performed well today, you killed it. No.
Yeah, that's why he has different phrases for like, oh, you did a good job, that was gnarly. There's like other things he says that like is showing someone that did a decent job. Like, that's fine, say that. But when it's cream of the crop, big moment, that's when you get a you killed it.
Yeah, but he's been using it way too loosely, at least last season, maybe before then. So I'm over it. If it were up to me, and this I could never convince you to get rid of, but that wouldn't even get you points.
No, I mean, the you killed it getting points was basically what sparked the Challenge Fantasy League.
Well, you should feel bad that you're getting points on a Jenna you killed it that's not deserved.
I'm not giving them back.
I'm not asking you to give them back, but I just think like everybody has overdone this you killed it thing. Let's not all glorify it. It's over. Stop trying to make fetch happen, right? Like, he killed it. I'm probably going to get a lot of shit for that. Anyway, they confirm that next week they're going to split into teams. So we're all, I imagine, looking forward to that.
It'll change everything.
A few questions from the listeners. Judah Ray Almario. This is more of a question, but I thought it was funny. More of a comment question. Right. Is the challenge basically MTV's version of Survivor? Redemption Island, family members, and a crazy guy named Tony?
Yeah, that's all we need is some type of tribal council, and we're ready to go.
Alex Panda Moran wants to know, between Dario, Corey, and Tony, which rookie do you think will make the biggest impact this season, both competitively and entertainment-wise?
Entertainment, I mean, for me, it's obviously Tony. I think Tony's not even just a rookie. I think he might be the entertainment star of the season. Although maybe Shane, but that'll be close. But for competitiveness, it was close. I mean, Corey did have a good episode. I thought Dario did too. I think Dario could be like a regular. I think he might be one of the Are You the One guys that sticks. So I think he could be it.
To me, Shane was clearly the breakout star. Like, every time Shane was on the television, I was cracking up. You know, like, he had three drops. I could have recorded so many more to piss everyone off with. I also thought Corey is going to, you know, and I was hard on Corey in the preview, but he really surprised me this episode. I think he came on really strong. Who knows, you know, I don't know measurably how he did in the challenge, but he certainly wasn't in the conversation for the worst. And I think he provided really great sound, funny narration through the episode. So I'm looking forward to more Corey.
Overall, though, it could be a very strong rookie class for the season between the new people from the real world and then the Bloodlines. Like, this could be a really good reinvigorating of the challenge crop.
No, definitely. Chris Hickey, who do you wish was on this season with their loved one?
Well, when I first heard about the Bloodlines concept, I thought this was perfectly made for Nicole from the past real world before. I don't know, with her twin sisters. I thought she would 100% be on it. I was kind of surprised that she wasn't.
Which is crazy, too, because she has not explained. Like, certain people we've talked about have offered bullshit explanations, like, sometimes you don't fit the theme. But, like, Nicole is someone who has retweeted people saying that they wish she was on, but she's not provided an explanation. I know, like, maybe her sisters were engaged or something. Like, maybe her sisters didn't want to do it, but
they can move their wedding. Jill did.
Yeah, right. One thing that's interesting is Laurel. So we confirmed what we weren't sure about last week, that Marie, thanks to a listener who tweeted at us, I'm sorry, it was so long ago, but you're great and appreciated, that Marie and her cousin or sister did Instagram that they were slated to be on. They, like, sent a post of an email they got from MTV and saying, like, damn it, Marie, like, we could have been on and had a great time. Laurel tweets out this week, my cousin and I were confirmed for Bloodlines till I decided not to sign one of the ridiculous medical releases. In come Christina and her sis. And it's like, does everyone think that they were going to be like, Christina and Emily could have only replaced one person, not like 100 teams.
Right. Yeah. I mean, having Laurel or Marie would have been great. I mean, almost having Laurel wouldn't have been good because, like, she'd be such an overwhelming force that it would kind of dominate the season. But I mean, I love Marie. I think she was only on one season. I think she might have been on the Battle of the Seasons with St. Thomas, but I would love to see her back.
And then one thing, just in case anyone's wondering, Laurel said they decided to add a clause that says they could override the federal HIPAA privacy rules. Sorry, just no, too invasive. Which is unbelievable that everyone on the season was willing to sign that.
Yeah, that's nuts. It's amazing what they sign away to do these shows.
Alex Panda Moran wants to know, based on what we've seen, which Bloodlines do you think could potentially become challenge staples?
I mean, the two standouts obviously would be Shane and Nicole. So we'll have to see. I mean, I'll be stunned that those two aren't on future seasons. I mean, no one really else stood out that much. I mean, I guess Mitch and Rihanna they had a little thing, so they were interesting just a little bit, but no one else really stood out so far.
Borrowing from what Rob does every week on RHAP, I want to talk about every eliminated contestant and if we think we'll see them back after each week. So what do you think the odds are we see Emily and or Christina back on the show?
Almost zero. I think they're the epitome of one and doneers.
Yeah, it's kind of a shame because I think we both underestimated their ability to perform and they didn't really get to show it that clearly. I think Christina has that high, potential for drama, almost exactly what you're saying you like about Tony.
Right.
Christina can also provide and have shown that. And I think it's interesting, like, if Tony did get sent home, I think we'd probably be saying, like, oh, we'll definitely see him back. Right. But I think if Christina had gotten maybe like three good episodes in, maybe she had a better chance. But Emily, 0%, Christina, probably like 0.001.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, I would say, yeah, Christina Delphi has a better chance over Emily, but I really don't see either of them coming back.
OK, so something that was really interesting, Worlds Colliding for us on MTV. So someone tweeted when T Raines downgrades to Kiki for stunning Maddie or Madison makes me so mad. And Kiki responded, Kiki from Are You the One? If you're referring to a certain Snapchat, that is not me. So don't go dragging me into things. Ha ha ha. No. And then they had an exchange where Madison was like, you're good, Kiki. And Kiki was like, okay, I was so lost there for a minute, blah, blah, blah. And then somebody else, Afia Kareem at 65_ Justin Bieber, fooled me there, tweeted the infamous picture. And then Olivia P on Twitter let us know that this woman is allegedly Tony's ex Elizabeth from Real World Skeletons.
Oh my God.
And I did Google her, and this, I'm not willing to say it's a perfect match, but it does look very much like her, this alleged Kiki lookalike. I think is Elizabeth for sure. Which is just so pathetic.
It's so pathetic for like all parties involved, everyone. And I fully believe it.
And all Tony has tweeted, he's been radio silence, except he tweeted an advertisement for Visa and Taco Bell, which is like, of all the people on the challenge, you're really going to pay Tony to advertise for you?
Gotta cash those checks.
One other quick thing before we get to the draft is we got a couple of 5-star reviews this week that I wanted to point out. So Omarion's Entourage gave us a 5-star review. And one thing I said at the end of my podcast with Rob is Rob has said he gets a lot of letters from people saying, oh, you know, I like people appreciate the podcast because you're listening to them when you're bored, you're in your commute, there's nothing better to do. Or some people who are going through difficult times, which I can totally relate to, the podcast kind of gets you through those times. So that's kind of in the vein that Omarion's Entourage 5-star review went on, and that was really touching. So thanks for the love, and glad to be hanging out with you via podcast. And then a friend of mine posted Incognito as Party City Bandit, and it is personal to me, which is why it's so funny. So I will spare everyone reading it, but it made me laugh and still counts as a 5-star review. So thank you.
Absolutely. Hey, and I'll take friends and family reviews. All we can get. Let's bump it up.
Where is Plainview Sue here on the reviews?
I don't think she knows where to find iTunes, to be perfectly honest.
She's very tech savvy. She's 1,000 Twitter followers plus.
She's very Twitter savvy. She's not. The questions I get asked about how to do things sometimes will make you laugh.
Well, you need to set her up so she can give us a 5-star review.
Fair enough.
All right. So last one we got this week, subject Absolute Joy from Tim Hiab, who is also pretty active on Twitter. Very funny. So he said Ali and Brian's takes on the insanity of the challenge crew is a must listen for any fan of the show. Warning, you will love it so much. You will start watching any show they recap. So thank you very much, everyone, for your 5-star reviews. If you want to leave us a 5-star review, you can go to www.robhasawebsite.com/challengeiTunes and subscribe and leave us some love there. Somebody in their comments on Brian, I just want to tell you this, the comments on my podcast with Rob wrote like, I enjoyed this while eating a free banana and a free apple. What a callback.
Was that the same person who left the 5-star review?
I don't remember, but regardless, it's great.
It has to be. It has to be.
And then, yeah, do you want to update us on the draft? Oh, I'm sorry. Real quick. Usually I do this stuff in the beginning, but I forgot to. So questions, you guys left such awesome questions. We had like 43 questions or something. So don't be discouraged if we didn't pull it. You know, we had some limited time this week. Keep the questions coming. We love it. We read all of them. They're great.
Absolutely. Guys, you guys killed it this week. Absolutely.
Bleh.
All right. So, Fantasy League. So you had a very good first week led by my boy Tony and your boy Shane. You had 265 points. I had 190.
Which just shows how much Tony sucks. Oh, no, I had Tony.
You had Tony. He dominated. Yeah. He put up a big 70 spot.
I got confused. Keep going.
So
I'm awesome.
We'll go. So I'll go through all the scoring so you can yell at me for what I did.
Wait, let me pull mine up. It's slow. I'm in Google Docs. All right, you can go and I'll remember. I'll just remember to interject.
Okay. So Kahut and Jill obviously each got 10 points for winning the challenge of the week.
Can't dispute that.
Jenna and Brianna each got 15 points for winning the elimination, but only Jenna gets the killed it points.
For shame.
So now the kissing situation. The no coitus, so all kissing. So
that we know pairs, of.
There's no confirmed coitus, so I couldn't award anything. So the kissing was Anissa and Corey, Christina and Tony, Dario and Kellyanne, and Mitch and Rihanna. Sound good?
Yep.
All right.
You'll know if it doesn't sound good.
I'm sure I will. From the Tony and Shane fight, they each got 20 points for producer jumping in. Well done by them. The verbal fights. So this is, I'm sure, where we're going to have some disputes. So obviously Vince and Corey each get 5 for their thing in the club. Obviously, Tony and Shane each get their thing before they started beating the crap out of each other. But then I had Tony, Nicole, Nani, and Larissa all getting 5 points for their dispute over the common herd around the world.
Gotcha.
Does that sound good?
Yep.
All right. Shane and Tony, 15 points for beating the crap out of each other. Crying points. Obviously, Nicole has 5. Emily, 2 crying points for when she thought Christina was a slut and then when they got eliminated.
See, what we also already discussed off air, and you're bringing it back like we never discussed this. Nicole gets points. Emily gets points. What Christina and Emily did at the end of the challenge was absolutely not crying, and anyone can watch it and tell me that. There was no tears. It was just as much as Camilla did in the beginning. Camilla gets 2 crying points because she cries after her confrontation with Tony, and then she also cries on a separate day in her confessional about the same situation. But those are 2 distinct cries. And you said earlier, which was confusing to me, that you only try to count it if it's in-game. We're talking about an episode. We're not there. We don't know what's happening in the game.
I just meant, like, if someone's, like, crying in the moment and then they have a confessional about crying about the same moment, I'm always torn about whether that should be 2 different
cries.
Well,
let me settle that for you right now, because it's based on the challenge on the show. So, like, if someone makes out in a confessional, that counts as a makeout. If someone cries in that confessional, it counts as a cry. It's we're judging the show, what we see happen on TV. We're not judging like, oh, was this during the game or was this when they were being interviewed about it? I mean, why get yourself all crazy about that? A cry is a cry.
Okay. That's fair.
And
that's fair.
What so happened Camilla with Emily and Christina was not a cry. Emily crying over the slut thing, 100%, that's a cry.
So that means no crying points for Christina and none for Corey?
In my opinion, no. Absolutely not. Corey didn't cry. He said he was going to cry or he was acting like a baby, but he didn't cry.
All right. So that'll be the rule going forward. All right. So we have that.
Feel free, the world to correct me if you think I'm wrong, but I think I have Corey, so I'm not biased.
I need to start using that poll thing on Twitter.
Rules are rules.
That sounded really bad, but yeah.
I edged you out in that prediction.
I didn't look at the end results. What was the final?
I haven't
tally?
Looked recently, but it was like 54%.
It's only a 24-hour thing, so right when it's over, it's over.
I don't think I looked like right when it was over, but okay. And it's too. I have too many tweets about the Survivor stuff, but it was.
Look at you.
I didn't. No. I tweeted too much. Is what I'm saying. I have too many tweets, which is why I can't find it myself. So that was not a brag. Regardless, I did finish out in the lead because of people who don't even know about the challenge, but just wanted to support me, which I appreciate.
Of course. Just quickly close the book on this. Everyone other than Christina and Emily get 5 points for surviving the episode. Candace, 10 points for her non-cute puke in the bus. Well done by her. That's actually one of the weird characters that you would think come up a lot in these shows, but really don't. So well done by her.
No, I was actually shocked that anyone was going to get puke points.
Yeah, it's a great one. And then the disputed one that I had with my friends is your rule about the moaning, subtitle moaning in the bathroom for Tony and Christina.
This is, maybe I didn't explain it well enough in the preview because I was just off the top of my head, but this is exactly what I'm talking about. Any situation where they're putting subtitles on actions happening to show that there's sexual activity going on, that is what I mean by subtitle moaning. But even if you wanted to be technical on that, they still got the camera in the doorway, like catching them leaving the bathroom. So either way, count it.
All right. So they each get 10 points. And just quickly updating because there were some changes. Now your lead has shrunk, I believe. I don't remember what I said, but I think it shrunk a little bit because now you're down to 255 and I have 185.
Well, I think we both shrunk because it was 260 and 190.
Okay. So then never mind.
One thing, if I could go back and argue and I had thought about it, I would say that losing the challenge should be minus points. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you can add that if you want. You don't have to. You killed it, I think, should be 100% at least reduced, but it's too late. And
it's too late.
Someone did suggest on Twitter that fighting with your bloodline should be points. And I think that's a great suggestion. But since you still get points just for fighting, I think no need to upset the balance now.
No, that's a good one because we do always like to have like a specific thing for each season. Like for last season, we had points for winning redemption duels and stuff like that. So that would have been a good call. But I think it's too late in the game to add that for now. But that was a good call.
I think that's all I have. I'm just reviewing my notes. Yeah, I think that's it. Oh, one funny thing I want to add is some of the patrons from Rob Has a Podcast invited me to join their fantasy draft, which is just based on challenge wins. And mm-hmm. I am in dead last with zero. Oh, no. Everyone else has at least 1 point. My bad.
Oops.
At least I'm doing better here.
There you go. For now. That's all you got?
That's it.
All right. So that'll wrap up the premiere. Challenge Bloodlines will be back. We should be back to our regularly scheduled night of Thursday nights, hopefully coming out Fridays, but who knows? Situations get in the way. But we hope to stick to that moving forward. You can subscribe at robiswebsite.com/challenge iTunes, or you can follow me at BusDriversRoute. They can follow you.
You can follow me at LashTweets.
And we will be back next week, episode 2, kicking in the high gear. Until then.
Well, really, later this week.
Later this week, that's right. Until then, have a good one.